Good morning, everyone. I would like to begin by greeting the Commissioner Kadri Simpson and thanking her, of course, for her presence. It is a pleasure for us to have this opportunity at the Assembleia da República, the Portuguese Parliament. Of course, she has a vast experience in terms of politics, and of course, now as a commissioner in an area, I think, that is at the very top of the European political agenda, as well as the national agenda. And so it's very, very important for us to have an opportunity, really, to have a debate period by joining both environment and energy. Of course, I will begin by greeting everyone, and then I will actually ask Tiago Brandão Rodrigues to proceed. I only wanted to remind everyone, really, of the rules of the game. So we will begin, of course, with Commissioner Kadri Simpson. She will have 10 minutes. And then afterwards, we will have, of course, a question and answer period. So without further ado, I would ask Tiago Brandão Rodrigues, please, to proceed. Good morning, Mr. Chairperson. I would like to greet again Mrs. Kadri Simpson. I also want to underline the importance of having a member of the European Commission here present in Portugal. I also want to greet all of the members of Parliament who were also here yesterday evening. So I know that they've had very little time to recover from yesterday, but it shows your commitment to be here for this very important event. I want to greet once again the Commissioner, Kadri Simpson. I hope you enjoyed the north of Portugal. I know that you were in Matosinhos. I hope that you'll also visit the InFloat project. And of course, we're very interested in all projects that are underway, both for the environment and energy. I want to explain a few points related also with this particular day. Of course, again, the Commissioner will begin today. She will have 10 minutes, and then each one of the parliamentary groups will have 3 minutes. And of course, we will have a question and answer immediately. So I would therefore like to ask Ricardo Pinheiro, representative of the Socialist Party, if he could begin. And since we know that we will have a plenary session at 10 in the morning, and the Commissioner as well has a very busy agenda, so we will try to respect the times. So again, we will begin with the Commissioner Kadri Simpson. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. Bom dia, good morning. It is a honour to be in front of you today because as a former member of the Estonian National Parliament, I always appreciate if I have a chance to exchange with members of Parliament. And I want to describe what has happened since Russia started to manipulate with our energy markets. This has been an extraordinary year. Because Russia's invasion of Ukraine triggered the most serious energy crisis in a generation. At first, they unilaterally stopped gas exports to a number of member states. And of course, it was an attempt to manipulate our energy markets and divide us. Our consumers clearly suffered. However, faced with this crisis, Europe came together in unity and solidarity with emergency measures and a medium-term response based on our Repower EU plan. And today I want to describe what this has meant in practice in the short to medium term for the EU, but also for Portugal, and what this means for the future of EU energy policy. Nearly a year to this day, on 18th of May 2022, the European Commission presented our RePower EU plan based on 3 pillars. how to tackle this situation where we lost our dominant gas supplier. And these three pillars were to diversify away from Russian sources. So already a autumn before war started, we started to reach out to our international partners because we saw that Russia left European underground gas storages empty. And our international partners, United States, Norway, but also Algeria and Azerbaijan, they all were able to increase their supplies, gas supplies, to Europe. But that was clearly not enough because what we lost was volume that other gas producers were not able immediately to replace. So we had to promote also fuel switch, and of course we prioritized renewables. So where it was possible to replace natural gas with alternatives, we had to do so. And on top of that, we had to increase our energy efficiency measures, because without saving natural gas, it was impossible to stabilize international gas markets. You have to keep in mind that Russia cut 90 billion cubic meters of natural gas. They had no alternative supply routes, so this was a major hit for international gas markets. And 1 year on, the results speak for themselves on all three pillars. We have substantially weaned ourselves off Russian gas. When in 2021 we still received 155 billion cubic meters of natural gas from Russia, then this year we expect only 20. And now our biggest supplier is Norway, not Russia anymore. In 2022, we managed to replace 70 billion cubic meters of Russian gas with alternative LNG supplies. And here in Portugal, the gas supply security is very resilient. You had no threat that at any moment you will not have enough natural gas, because mostly you receive your LNG from other suppliers. And in terms of energy savings and efficiency, we have also seen some very good results, including here in Portugal. I know that you had a special plan for energy savings, which complemented structural measures to reduce gas demand, and these have certainly worked. In the middle of the crisis last July, energy ministers made agreement that we will cut our natural gas consumption by 15%. And here in Portugal, your consumption fell by 16%. So this was voluntary action, but exactly at that level that was agreed among EU ministers. But fundamentally, the most critical pillar of Repower EU plan is the stronger push on renewable energy. And this is at the heart of what Repower EU really is: a plan to build a clean energy system without any Russian influence, a plan to replace step by step imported fossil fuels with homegrown renewables. And here again, we delivered, surpassing all expectations. So new wind and solar capacity rose by 45% compared to 2021. And last year, wind and solar together, they generated 22% of EU's electricity. So they generated more than natural gas-fired power plants. And this happened in part thanks to the many Europeans also installing solar rooftop panels, because around 61% of new solar capacity came from rooftops, small producers. And we have seen the same positive trend here in Portugal. In 2022, you installed around 1.2 gigawatts of renewable capacity. So right now, the hydro is a dominant renewable source here, but the growth rate for solar is impressive, and of course, you do have a great wind potential too. Honourable members, even before Russia started this unjustified war against Ukraine, renewables were our priority, because one of the first flagship initiatives that our president Ursula von der Leyen announced in her very first days in the office was European Green Deal. And Russia's aggression and the threat to our energy supplies made this priority all the more valid and urgent. We now do have a binding target, higher binding target for 2030. This is 42.5% of renewable energy in our energy mix. And this means over 1,000 gigawatts of total wind and solar capacity by 2030, compared to around 400 gigawatts right now. And it also means adding about 1.5 times more wind and solar capacity by 2030 than what we have now. So we do believe that we emerge from this crisis if we work in different fronts to ensure that renewable acceleration really happens. We know that there are bottlenecks. Well, first and most challenging one is permitting. And we addressed this challenge already last year. Actually, last year, energy ministers met 12 times. This is extraordinary. Usually, council meetings take place during half a year, twice or three times. We met 12 times. We presented five times emergency measures to address this energy crisis, to bring down costs, but also to secure that we will not face a situation where we have to start curtailing our industry, ration gas because it doesn't have enough for every consumer, and then the very moment when we already were successfully filling our underground gas storage and addressing the consumption side, we started to think, look forward and address the permitting issue. So simplifying and speeding up permitting for renewable projects was addressed first as an emergency measure, and now we added it to new renewable energy directive. And this also will help us to accelerate the renewable projects because national governments can create to-go zones for renewable installations. We also want to bring the production of renewable technology back to Europe. We do have still global leadership on offshore wind, but we have lost some ground on solar, and that's why we made a proposal to address also this bottleneck, that supply chain is not here in Europe. And with this overriding public interest for new renewable installations while preserving a high level of environmental protection should help us to achieve 2030 targets. Then, of course, we have to keep in mind that that our consumers were hit severely due to very high prices. And in March, the European Commission put forward a proposal to reform the EU's electricity market design. One of our goals is to create better conditions for investment in new renewable generation that will bring prices down, but it will also help to stabilize prices for producers and ensure that consumers benefit more directly from lower cost of renewables. And third, we have to replace natural gas with cleaner alternatives. And this is why we will heavily invest into the hydrogen economy. We aim to produce 10 million tons of renewable hydrogen already by 2030 here in Europe. And our industry, our transport sector needs actually more. So we have to import another 10 million tons from third countries. And now we have new legislation that ensures that there will be a market for renewable hydrogen in the EU. We have agreed specific consumption targets for renewable hydrogen. If industry consumes hydrogen, part of it has to be renewable hydrogen, and the same goes with transport sector. And here too, We'll be counting on Portugal and Portuguese hydrogen producers so that the significant share of this hydrogen in this decade will be produced here in hydrogen. Fourth, we are determined to collaborate with international partners in line with our climate action commitment. You know that Europe is responsible only for 9% of global greenhouse gas emissions. We have to help our international partners to cut their emissions too. And this is part of our global outreach. We are not only asking our international partners to produce more natural gas to replace lost Russian volumes. On the contrary, we are willing to engage with them to promote also renewable sources. So, honorable members, over the last year, we have witnessed immense difficulties, but we are back in the situation where our underground gas storage is two-thirds full. Prices are back to pre-war level, and we can expect that this year is another record year for renewables. We do have several legislative pieces still under negotiation with our co-legislators, Member States and European Parliament, but I do believe that by accelerating our green transition, we will bring prices down for our consumers and industry, and this gives us competitive advantage. And this brings back some of the clean tech production to Europe. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Senhora Comissária, por esta intervenção.
Thank you very much for your initial words. And thank you to all those who are also listening to us by means of digital means. I would ask Ricardo Pinheiro from the Socialist Party, please, if he could proceed with his comment, respecting the time that will be allotted. So once again, Ricardo Pinheiro, 2 minutes, please go ahead. Good morning, Chairperson, Members of Parliament, Commissioner. It is true that the way that Europe is looking at competitiveness in terms of the price of energy will be absolutely decisive. Portugal also has actually paved an important path in order to find renewable energies. We are looking very attentively at the prices of carbon in the international markets, and I think this will be very important, and the European Commission will need to play a very important role because we're talking equally about the environment. Portugal is betting very strongly on increasing wind energy. This is very clear nationally, but also internationally. Wind energy is already representing a substantial amount in Portugal in terms of energy production. But of course, we need to introduce more than 10 and 11 gigawatts in the Atlantic coast or along the coast of Portugal. I wanted to hear your opinion. Is this the way towards energy transition? Should we continue to be betting on wind energy? And I also would like to know your opinion about how the American Environment Agency is actually betting on a very clear plan, and it will become far more competitive, I think, in the European market. And so I would like to hear the Commissioner that the levels that Europe has defined for technological development in times of time readiness level that is very low for hydrogen production, and in my opinion, and in the Socialist Party's opinion, we need more incentives and more communitarian funds so that this European competitiveness in terms of hydrogen production vis-a-vis the United States can be actually successful. Also, the Europe before the war in Ukraine had a very clear strategy in terms of the production of semiconductors. This should also be one of the main priorities for Europe. And Portugal is facing a very important question. Should Portugal or not actually, how can Portugal better, make compatible its resources to defend the environment? I would ask, please, the Commissioner, Kadri Simpson, you have 3 minutes to say whatever you wish at this moment.
Thank you. You raised several very important issues. Among them, we should well bet on one single technological solution, or do we need all the low carbon and green alternatives that help us to get rid of fossil fuels? Portugal has a very ambitious renewable target. And you do have some advantages that other European regions do not have. For example, the possibility to store renewable energy in the form of hydropower, because wind and solar might fluctuate, and then you have to have a base load that helps you stabilize the flows. So in this regard, I am really looking with great admiration what is happening here in regard of renewables. I mentioned that there are some bottlenecks that doesn't allow us to accelerate green transition as fast as we would like to have. The first one is permitting. We have to keep in mind all the environmental considerations, but we need renewables to be able to replace more polluting fossil fuel sources of energy. Then, if we will build more renewables, our grid, electricity grid, needs the strengthening. In the case of offshore wind plants will be built in the regions where no grid connection is existing. And there you can expect that with the help of EU co-financing, first time we can support big wind farms also with our funds to build out the grid connection. And of course, our top priority is to interconnect our regional markets. So I have to admit that Portugal, together with our neighbor Spain, is not sufficiently interconnected with the rest of the Europe, and this is a key for us, so that with the help of Portuguese renewables, the other member states will also benefit from affordable renewables from Iberian Peninsula. And the third possible challenge is, can we produce these windmills, foundations and wind blades and engines that we will need here, because all the European sea basins and countries on the shores have announced that they will have very ambitious plans. So will these wind parks and necessary components, will they be produced here, or should we import them like we are doing with solar panels?
Para terminar, Sra. Deputada, Sra. Comissária.
So these are the challenges that we address with our legislative proposals. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Sra. Comissária. E dou agora a palavra então ao Sr. Deputado Paulo Muniz.
And I would ask Paul Mnij, now representative of the PSD party, to proceed. Thank you very much, Commissioner Kadri Simpson, and Mr. Chairperson, I would like to better understand the electric interconnections. They will be absolutely pivotal if we want to increase renewable energies. We have to have a solid electric system. And so, finally, the Portuguese government has given reason to the PSD party, the Social Democratic Party, that there are just not enough connections within the European electric grid. And so, besides the Iberian Peninsula, we know that by 2030, we will have 30 gigawatts of interconnections, but the Iberian Peninsula will only have 5 gigawatts. And so what efforts is the European Commission making so that the Iberian Peninsula can be interlinked? That's my first question. My second question, Portugal, of course, as you know, has archipelagos, and these archipelagos many times have difficulty in creating electric connections again. And so for them also to increase in new renewable energies, it'll be very difficult to create interconnections. But I think that they will also have to opt for storing energy. And so my question is, wouldn't it be reasonable for the European Commission to actually analyze the archipelagos in terms of energy and also think of a plan for these archipelagos due to their geographical nature, since it is very difficult for them to connect to any type of European electrical grid? Then, I know that this is my third point. Every country has to inform the European Commission on everything that they are doing in terms of demand, what exactly they're doing, how they're redistributing the surplus of the electrical network, if they're giving it, for instance, to companies that are going through difficulties, or are they targeting families that are having social difficulties? So, having said this, can you answer these three points? And thank you very much. Thank you very much. So please, Commissioner Kadri Simpson, 3 minutes for you to answer these three points from the Social Democratic Party. Please go ahead.
I will start with remote regions, because in Europe we do have lots of islands that are not interconnected with the mainland. We even do have 2 member states who are not interconnected with the rest of the European Union, Cyprus and Ireland. And this is our task, to finance or co-finance partially the necessary subsea electricity cables. For islands, we have created a Clean Energy for EU Islands Forum. The next meeting for island representatives will take place in the beginning of June, and their actual best practices are shared, how to decarbonize your living environment, because many small remote areas are still dependent on diesel generators, and this is not a sustainable solution. You can also expect that with EU funds, cohesion funds, for example, or regional funds, it is possible to support these plans. Now, coming to the bigger interconnections that are still under making, Biscay Bay interconnection that is already under construction, and then 2 cables that one day will cross the Pyrenees. These are in our projects of interest list. At the very moment when all the permitting procedures are done, significant part of the construction costs will be covered by EU funds. And from our side, we are providing all the technical assistance to project promoters so that without further delays, they could proceed with these projects. And overall, I think that better interconnected electricity markets will bring benefits for all the EU member states. And on top of that, we have to well also support our close neighborhood, because as I was mentioning earlier, we do have neighborhood countries who are polluting more due to the fact that they are still consuming large share of coal. And with interconnections that that give them also incentive to invest into renewables, we can positively solve this issue. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, senhora comissária.
Thank you, Commissioner Kadri Simpson. And now we move on to Brun Nunush from the Chega Party. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson, Commissioner, members of Parliament. There are some questions here that I would like to ask. When we have a problem in Europe with a war that we all consider to be stupid, then there's also a dependency, I think, that many European countries had shown. Now, in the last year, we have seen that the time has come for us to negotiate a single price. And not everyone was on board. This coincides actually with the posture of Qatar and how Qatar actually influenced European Parliament, because they didn't want a pre-fixed price. And so how has this situation been surpassed? And I would like to understand your opinion about this. Also, having said this, it is true that Portugal has advanced in several matters and we have been an essential partner. But I also know that there's a pipeline between France, Portugal, and Spain for the supply of gas, and that it would have financing from the European Union. But we also know that we don't have anything really approved for the passage of this pipeline. So what can you tell us about this pipeline in terms of objectives? Do you have anything new to tell us about this particular pipeline? Because we have difficulty internally understanding where we are. Now, in terms of the pipeline, Spain, given the energy crisis, actually reopened some of the coal plants. Now, we can speak of wind energy, and Portugal has a vast coastline that allows for strong investment in wind energy. But in the past, after several governments that wanted to explore gas along the coastline of the Algarve, even very recently when I was visiting Algarve, many of the municipalities do not want to invest in wind energy. So Sagres, for instance, it does not want to invest in wind energy. What is your opinion about all of this, please? Thank you. Mr. Pedro Nunes, please, Commissioner, 3 minutes once again. Go ahead.
This is true that being dependent on one single dominant supplier is always a problem. And we have to do our utmost that never again we will find ourselves in this kind of situation. And as regards Russia's supplies to Europe, the situation is now irreversible. They unilaterally didn't service existing long-term contracts, left several member states in a very difficult situation. And we were able to solve this issue with support of trusted partners who were able to increase their production. But also we were able to solve this issue with the liquid LNG market due to the fact that China's consumption was, due to COVID measures, significantly lower than usually. So we are still in very dangerous situation, despite the fact that our underground gas storage is now two-thirds filled. We do not know what kind of weather exactly will be there for year to come. We don't know what is Russia's behavior, and to solve this issue, we have set up a joint purchase platform to negotiate gas price for all the companies who are interested to participate. So we have this aggregated demand. The buyers of natural gas here in Europe, these are not governments, this is not European Commission, these are private companies, and we will help with this platform them to use our purchasing power, our joint purchasing power. So the first call will be operational in the weeks to come. And saying that, of course, we have to keep in mind that our natural gas demand is actually decreasing. Well, a couple of years ago it was 400 billion cubic meters. So this year we don't expect that we will consume more than 330. So step by step, we will replace natural gas first in power generation with renewables, but then of course also in heating, because 40% of natural gas in Europe is used to heat our homes, also with more cleaner alternatives, for example with heat pumps. Now, this claim that we had last year switch from gas to coal, this actually is not a trend as such, because Europe was last year the only economical region in the world that cut greenhouse gas emissions by 2.5%. At the same time, globally, emissions grew 5%. And we introduced 10 packages of sanctions against Russia. The first package was targeting Russian coal. We do not consume Russian coal anymore, and that means that our coal consumption decreased, because almost half of the coal that our industry used before the war was launched by Russia came from Russia. Thank you.
And now we move on to the next question. This is from the Iniciativa Liberal. Good morning, members of Parliament, Commissioner. It is a pleasure to have you here. I want to take advantage of this occasion to speak of strategy. And the European strategy for energy, for me, seems to be a fast one, because we're amidst two traumatic events, both the Ukrainian war, we have problems with Russia, there's a lack of competitiveness in Europe. So in a few months, we have a Green Deal and the Industrial Policy Act and the Critical Raw Material Act. Everything has been published. But the pillars that are actually supporting these directives, there are contradictions. In terms of carbon neutrality, it is not compatible with 40% of reducing by 40% the carbon emissions in Europe. So the supply chains are very slow, and they're not actually using the technologies that would be necessary to reduce carbon emissions by 40%. Second point, we are behind the United States. We don't want to be behind the United States. We want to be competitive. We need, of course, understandings, and we need a solid strategy. And finally, there is a tension, I think, in terms of liberalizing the market. We have industrial policies, we have barriers to free markets, and there's a race to subsidies. There's a true race to subsidies. There's going to be competitiveness, but I think, in my opinion, it's to get subsidies. So the question is this: if we have to choose between energy autonomy, carbon neutrality, and free markets, because that's what can give Europe, what is your priority between the three that I've just mentioned? And thank you.
A palavra à senhora comissária para poder responder ao senhor deputado João Coutrinho de Figueiredo. Tem a palavra, senhora comissária.
I actually cannot make this kind of decision out of three pillars, because our energy policy in Europe is laid on three pillars: energy security, decarbonization, and affordability. And one doesn't happen without another. We have to secure that our industry and consumers will be able to use energy price-wise. We have to secure that this energy is available. And then, of course, we have to decarbonize our energy production, because this is part of our growth strategy. I mentioned that when we presented our Green Deal, then we were among the first ones. Actually, Europe was the first one who announced that we will become climate neutral. And then other major players across the globe followed us. United States, but also China, with a later date, and India, because they saw that there is a advantage for first movers, the ones who are investing into research and innovation and will uptake new technological solutions, will benefit out of it. We were actually also the ones who responded to the COVID crisis with Next Generation EU plan, where more than one third of the investments have to be dedicated to climate and energy related expenditure. And right now, across Europe, we do see that member states are now able to use these funds, and this allows us to believe that very ambitious targets for 2030 that were just agreed with our co-legislators this spring are realistic, because financing is now available, and plans to invest, depending on geographical circumstances, actually, to invest into rooftop solar or wind on land or on offshore is taking off. And for me, it is very important that some of these plans will materialize across the border, because this helps us to more effectively use the funds if several member states can benefit from these developments. Now, free market is a principle of the European Union. We have common market. Single market is also necessary for energy. And that brings me back to one of our priorities, to interconnect our Iberian Peninsula at sufficient level with the rest of the Europe, because this was agreed already several years ago that all our member states have to be sufficiently interconnected with the European electricity market. And we will continue our work to help the project promoters to do exactly that. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Sra. Comissária. Dou agora a palavra.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I would like to invite Duarte Alves now, please, to ask his question. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson, as well, Commissioner, Members of Parliament. We know that you visited Matosinhos during your visit here in Portugal, and I would like to know all of the promises that were made to the workers when the plant was actually closed. Unfortunately, none of the promises were actually complied with. And I am saying complied with because one of the questions that I would like to ask you, out of the 60 million that will go to the Just Transition Fund to Matosinhos, how much of this money will be given to the workers that were actually laid off from this refinery plant? Because we know that this obviously is highly damaging to our industrial capacity, and there are no gains in terms of decarbonization. So I would like to again underline that the closing of this plant was actually very harmful, and of course the workers haven't received any compensation. The promises just haven't been complied with. What can you tell us so that the promises may be actually complied with, all the promises that were made to the workers? I also know that you visited Viena do Castelo and an offshore wind project. And so, besides the energy, what other issues are you concerned with? We're talking about projects that we're talking about 320 acres along the Portuguese coastline of wind turbines. There are concerns, of course, related with the marine biodiversity, also the fishing villages that may be affected. And I would like to know if the European Commission also takes this into consideration when there are vast wind farms that are planned for several coastlines. Also, I would like to ask you that many times we continue to have, or the prices of electricity haven't lowered. The price of gas is determining the end price of electricity instead of the production costs. And this is very negative for the prices that consumers are paying. And so I don't think that we have done enough to lower prices for consumers, because they still find themselves in very difficult situations. Could you please comment on this? And thank you. Thank you. Please, Commissioner Kadri Simpson, would you please answer? Thank you.
European Union has five seas, and we have very good examples, for example, from North Sea Basin, how new offshore wind farms can multi-use the same sea basin with other sectors, being it fisheries, shipping, even military. And on top of that, offshore wind farms do need maintenance, and this creates well-paid jobs in the coastal villages. Now, coming to the Just Transition Fund, indeed, we just created this a couple of years ago to offer these workers who used to work in the very energy-intensive sectors or in mining sector new clean jobs. So these are funds that national governments can use to reskill the workers and to bring new investments in the region, so that workers who have lost their job in fossil industry can find new opportunities without feeling obliged to leave their home region. And as I was mentioning, these kind of trends have happened for decades now. First time ever, with the help of Just Transition Fund, based on national decision, you can support these regions. Not individual persons, because for that you have your own social scheme, but to create new clean jobs so that that work opportunities, job opportunities will remain in the region. And now on electricity prices, we came out with an electricity market design proposal that allows consumers to get benefits of renewables, affordable renewables in our energy mix, and helps them to opt for long-term price signals instead of day-ahead market if they want to do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. We will conclude this round of questions and answers. To conclude, I would like to thank all members of Parliament, and I would ask the chairperson of the table to conclude. I would also like to thank the interpreting services, because it's very important for us, for the commissioner. So thank you very, very much, Mr. Chairperson. Thank you. Besides underwriting everything that has been said by the commissioner, I would like to thank the presence of all members of Parliament, and of course I would like to specially thank the commissioner. I wish you the very best, not only at the commission, but specifically for these matters that are relevant for our future. We wish you the very best in Portugal and a safe return to Brussels. I would like to end also by allowing, on the name of offering the Commissioner, a small reminder of our visit here to Parliament.
Thank you for a warm welcome.
Thank you.
The session is now closed.